Right. This is a pleasant surprise, the number and everything. We had no idea. Because Godzilla and Jesus are over there in Smothers Theater. This is just, you know, Amish people. But my name is Steve Miller, and I'm the minister at the Sunshine Church of Christ in Portsmouth, Ohio. And I've been there for the past 21 years, and this is my wife, Serena. It's my job to introduce her. She has helped me with that work, and it is our home congregation. And we are not too far from some Amish, a developing Amish community right in our own area, but Holmes County is the largest Amish community in the world, Holmes County, in the northeastern quadrant of Ohio. Anyway, I want to introduce my wife to you. She's been married to me these past 46 years. We've got three sons. The oldest is 45 and the youngest is 27. Their wives and children all attend our congregation. And just want to say that Serena primarily writes what's called inspirational romance. And you say, why would she possibly be invited here to Pepperdine? But I'll get to that. She primarily writes inspirational romance. She's published 9 books since 2010. And 5 of those books have had to do with what's called Amish inspirational romance. So in the course of writing those Amish inspirational romances, she's gotten to know several Amish families. But 5 of those books have to do with the Amish. The first one has been turned into a TV movie by Up TV, Love Finds You in Sugar Creek, Ohio. And that movie won an award back in February for the best faith-based TV movie in 2014, programming in 2014. And Hallmark is going to be turning another one of her books into a movie sometime in 2016. She's won a couple major awards for her writing, and she has also been a Christie finalist. But during the past 5 years, she has made a lot of close friends with Amish, Old Order Amish families in Holmes County and also up in Michigan, Everett, Michigan. And because of those associations and contacts, her editor at Simon & Schuster pushed her to do a nonfiction book based on Amish parenting. And that's what this book is all about. And this is really the reason why we are here. It's a big subject, and we don't have a lot of time. And so I just wanted to introduce to you my wife, Serena Miller, on Keeping Kids Faithful.
I have a tendency to wander, so I'm going to stay really close to my notes because I want to finish in about a half hour so we've got time for questions. Okay, so Ohio is home to the largest settlement of Amish in the world, and I'm friends with many of them. They've helped me with my research and vetted the accuracy of my books about them. I've attended their worship, slept in their non-electric homes, and I've helped prepare for their weddings. The only thing they have ever asked of me is that I talk about their culture honestly. We are a very flawed people, one Amish father told me. Make sure you tell your people that. And they are a very flawed people. I am not touting their brand of religion, but I have found their children to be some of the happiest, most contented children in the world. My editor, who's trying to raise 2 young daughters in New York City, asked me to find out why. And the result was, more than happy, the wisdom of Amish parenting. I spent 2014 doing interviews among the Old Order Amish, trying to figure out this one issue. I questioned parent after parent, what is it that you are doing right that makes your children so happy? Each one seemed very perplexed by that question. Keeping children happy has never been considered a priority among the Amish. Instead, they talked about how they try to teach their children to be good workers, to help others, to be obedient, to be respectful, and to love God. A conversation I had with a young minister at the beginning of my research set the tone of the book. When Steve asked him what his dreams were for his children, the man sat quietly for a moment, thinking. And as he thought, various answers that we might give rolled through my head. I want my boys to have a good education. I want them to have a good marriage. I want them to find good jobs. But most of all, I just want my kids to be happy. The Amish minister gave an entirely different answer than what I was expecting. He said, "My dream for my children is that they become people of value." In other words, the Amish see happiness when they bother to think about it at all in terms of godly behavior. However, their older teenagers are sometimes very miserable. Most of you know that by the age of 16, most Amish kids are allowed more freedoms. They call it rumspringa, which means running around. Many get driver's license, many get cars, they dress in regular clothes, they get normal haircuts, they listen to radios, go to movies, they buy smartphones and learn to access Facebook, all of which is forbidden in the Amish culture. Parents allow this because their kids have a big decision to make. Behind all these freedoms in the Amish kids' minds is the knowledge that they will soon have to choose whether or not they will become Amish. And this decision is much harder for them to make than for our kids because it carries with it so much sacrifice. The decision weighs on them because it is so permanent. Like us, and this is a surprise to me, the line of demarcation for all the Amish sects is baptism. Once a person is baptized into the Amish church, there is no turning back. They will be expected to adhere not only to the Bible, but to their ordinung, which is the unwritten rules of the church that each congregation creates in the name of unity. If, after being baptized, they choose to leave the church, they will be shunned. The severity of the shunning is slightly different for each Amish church, and there are around 40 different sects of Amish of various degrees of conservatism. But all practice some form of it. If they choose not to be baptized, their families will not be happy about it, but they will usually still be allowed access to their families. They'll still be able to come home, see mom and dad, maybe attend a wedding. They will be considered English, though, which is their name for us, the English. And they will never have the intimate closeness with the Amish community that they had before. A young man's decision to be baptized into the Amish church is even heavier than the girl's. He is also agreeing to become a minister or a bishop if he is someday so chosen. This is an unpaid, lifetime, heavy responsibility, and most of the men dread it terribly. One Amish minister told me that he was so upset the moment that he knew he had been chosen minister, and it happens by, they will choose maybe five men, and then they will put these five hymn books out, and one of those hymn books in front of the church will have a slip of paper in it that says you are chosen, and they get to go up and choose the hymn book. It's a Amish way of casting lots, of giving God some control. This minister said that when he opened his book and saw you are chosen, he was so upset he almost threw up in front of the church. It is not an easy decision to make to become Amish. When I first got involved with the Amish, they were so quaint and old-fashioned, I assumed their numbers were dwindling, but I was wrong. The Amish population is doubling every 20 years, even though they do no evangelism. The main reason they are growing is because they retain an average of around 90% of their youth. 90%. As far as I can find, this is the highest retention rate in their history, and possibly the highest retention rate of any religious group anywhere in the world. In other words, these savvy Amish kids, with their outside jobs and cell phones, usually by their early 20s, sell their cars, climb into buggies, get rid of their cell phones, put on long dresses and bonnets, or homemade pants and suspenders, and they return to the church in which they were raised. One of the things that makes this retention rate especially astonishing to me is that when you compare it to other world religions, according to the Pew Forum, that's P-E-W, Forum, which does a study every few years on these things, even the Muslims are only retaining 76%. I attended a session here at the lectureship on Wednesday. It was very interesting to me. The woman said that in the churches of Christ, we are retaining something like 20 to 30% of our millennials. The phrase she used was, our kids are leaving in droves. So why are Amish kids, after a few years of running around, returning to their church in droves? One thing I know for sure, it's not because of their worship services. Recently, I read an article in which the author postulated that the only way we can survive as a fellowship is to become more relevant. He felt that we had to make our worship services more interesting and entertaining in order to compete with what our millennials are used to. I would agree with that had I not attended worship services in Amish churches. I have sat through their 3 to 4 hour sermons, worship services, on hard backless benches. I've seen the boredom on the faces of the people as they listened to their untrained ministers labor through their sermons. I've watched their little kids running in and out, getting drinks, and making unnecessary trips to the bathroom. I've heard their 500-year-old hymns, which were written by Amish martyrs, sung in achingly slow unison. There is an Amish joke that their songs are sung so slowly and the verses are so long that it is possible to arrive late, water and unhitch your horse, and still make it in before the first song ends. In other words, there are no bells and whistles in Amish worship. So if it isn't the worship, then what are the Amish doing right? Why are their children coming back? And these are some of our possibly flawed conclusions, but it's what I think it is. Do you want to use the board, then, Ufgiva?
Yeah, I'm from the board already.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Ufgiva, this is one of the things that I think is really, really important. When I asked one Amish man the difference that he saw between our children and their children, he said, have you ever heard of the term Ufgiva? Of course, you know, they speak in Pennsylvania Dutch. Ufgiva literally means a giving up of self, and that principle is taught by an early age. As one father explained, we teach our children that their needs and wants are important, but they are not more important than the needs and wants of their family, the church, and our community. They pointed out to me that one of the greatest differences between our cultures is that as a society, we revere individual rights and freedoms. The Amish instead revere the more biblical concept of the giving up of self, and they intentionally teach it to their children in word and in deed. I have never, ever come across an entitlement mentality among the Amish people. I don't think it exists. The net result of Ufgiva is that Amish young people are willing to sacrifice their own preferences and wants for the good of the family, the church, and the community. That's number one. Number two, connectedness. Of all the things that I admire about the Amish, the connectedness that they have is the one that I envy. I had a conversation with Les Troyer, a former Old Order Amish who turned Mennonite. He gave up the Amish because he wanted to pursue a higher education, which was forbidden. He has worked with Wycliffe Bible translators for years, producing translations of the Bible in every language on earth. Without me even asking, and he was in his 80s at that time with a family of his own, he said something about his decision to leave the Amish. He said, the one thing I miss out on, that I miss out of that decision the most, is the feeling of connectedness that I had when I was in the Amish community. He left when he was 18. The Amish are a together people. They work together, worship together, play together. Virtually every decision is made with how will this affect my family, my church, and my community. Individuality, as I just said, is not a big priority among the Amish. One way they have this connectedness is they tend to have small churches. There aren't any megachurches in the Amish community. They meet in their homes and barns, and roughly 200 people is the maximum that any Amish home will accommodate. When a church reaches 200, they break off into another congregation. The women within these churches spend an enormous amount of time together, and it's not necessarily in Bible studies. These women will hire a van, pack a picnic, take the kids, and go shopping together. They'll help one another clean their homes, cook together, can produce together, quilt together, and usually grandma's included. They're in and out of one another's homes daily. And the thing that I've noticed is they have so much fun together. When they're not out in public with a lot of English people looking at them, these are happy people. And sometimes they're very funny, too. I once asked a group of Amish women if they ever longed for privacy. One of them said, "Sometimes. But I'll tell you this, I've never been lonely a day in my life." I was a little envious. Now, what was funny was her younger sister said, "I think I was lonely maybe for about 2 hours, 4 years ago." And then the baby sister, who was, I don't know, in her 30s, she goes, "I wish I could be lonely sometimes," and looked at her sister. So anyway, I'm kind of envious. This fellowship creates a feeling of great belonging and safety for the children and the adults. Amish children don't worry about being taken care of. They know that they can depend on their church community to help financially or physically if there is a family crisis. They know they can depend on it. The class I referenced a few minutes ago from Wednesday here at the lectureship mentioned that one of the reasons we are losing so many young people, and there's been studies on this, is because they have so little connection with our older people. She believes that one of our problems is that there has been too much separation between generations within our churches. And I agree. This is not a problem for the Amish because their children naturally spend a lot of time with the older members of their family and church. Perhaps I should mention here the practice of the Dottie House. Do you know what the Dottie House is? Dottie House means grandfather house. And most Amish homes eventually will have a Dottie House beside of them. What will happen is it's a smaller house, slightly connected to the bigger house. And when a grandfather and grandmother retire, they'll usually sell the farm to a son or a daughter who will live in the big house with the children. And the grandfather and grandmother will be there, and they'll help this family as long as they can. There really is no retirement among the Amish. You'll often see three generations or more in the fields working together. They are going to be accessible by their grandkids, and they have a great influence on their grandkids, and they take that influence very seriously. Number three, they severely limit media consumption. I believe that part of the reason they have time to spend in fellowship is because they don't spend so much time in front of the television or a computer, artificially feeding the desire that we have for other people. I say they severely limit because some Amish families do have some. Some have a battery-operated DVD player that they're very proud of, on which they'll occasionally view Little House on the Prairie or the Waltons. As I said, everything is filtered through how will it affect the family. And they see these two particular programs as something that build family values. Because of the limited exposure to media, the Amish tend to see each other, and sometimes English visitors like me, as a great source of entertainment. I have been especially entertaining because I was so ignorant when I came into their group, and they like to tease me. I have never laughed so hard as when sitting around a kitchen table with a kerosene lamp, talking with my Amish friends, and their children are always nearby, looking on, enjoying the fun. We become the children's entertainment. In one conversation with an Amish minister, I asked what the greatest threat to the future, well, actually, it wasn't just one Amish minister, it was every Amish person I asked, everyone. What the greatest threat to the future of their Amish community? They all replied, "It's the picture phone," meaning the smartphones. Smartphones are allowed during the Rumspringa period of a young person's life, but the things that are available through a smartphone can be extremely toxic, as you know. The Amish people confided to me that they who have children of that age pray daily that their children will have the wisdom and self-discipline to not harm themselves with the picture phone. When those young adults come back to the Amish church, it is required that they will give up the smartphones. Generally speaking, the Amish view all media as a potential threat to their way of life, their families, their character, and their commitment to God. So for good reason, media consumption is severely limited. Number four, a strong work ethic. Oh my, the work ethic. That was one of the things that fascinated me the most. How do you teach your kids to just want to work? I am fascinated with the Amish teens. These kids are the most competent kids I've ever seen in my life. And they seem so matter-of-fact about it. This does not happen by accident. Amish mothers and fathers are very intentional about teaching their children how to work and how to enjoy work. There's a good reason for this. These children have to know how to work for their culture to survive. They pay taxes. They do not pay Social Security. They do not take any form of welfare. There is no world-type safety net for these people. They have to know how to work, and so it's very deliberate that they teach them. Their children, from what I have seen, are usually very capable of running a household, supporting a family, and even effectively running a small business just about the time our kids are going away to college. Another way they accomplish this work ethic is that they start very, very early. All the Amish people do this. At the age of two, they begin to teach their children how to do small chores. As one Amish mother told me, it would have been so much easier to have just done it myself. But she said, I knew I'd be shortchanging my child if I did that. One of my Amish friends told me a story about taking an Amish friend. I'm sorry, one of my non-Amish friends told me she'd taken an Amish mother and her children grocery shopping. As they got out of the car, the mother handed her children groceries to carry in, including a light grocery sack for her little two-year-old. My friend, thinking it was too much for the child, absentmindedly reached down to carry the sack herself. The Amish mother stopped her, took the sack out of her hands, handed it back to the toddler, and she said, please don't do that. He needs to learn how to help. There is an Amish phrase that I have learned to love. It's work frolic. Now, those two words don't seem to go together. Work, frolic, and the Amish mindset, they do. The Amish are sociable people who love being together. They feel that working together is a lot of fun, and thus the word frolic. They have quilting frolics. They have house painting frolics. They have barn cleaning frolics. You name the kind of work, and they will turn it into a frolic. Children are always included, and the youngest ones chase each other around and play while watching the adults and teens enjoy themselves by working together. There is usually a party atmosphere at these work frolics, even if there's a lot of work to do. But when tragedy strikes a family, the frolic turns deadly serious. And the amount of help a family can depend on when a loved one has died or a barn is burned or there is great sickness in the family is extremely impressive. This is a culture that takes care of its own. And often, it takes care of its English neighbors as well. Work is not viewed by the Amish as drudgery, and it's almost never used as punishment. It's viewed as a gift from God. One Amish mother told me that having children help with chores wasn't just to take some workload off of the parents. It was so that the children could feel like a necessary and useful part of the family. As a mother, that's where I didn't know. I did everything for my boys, and that was not smart. Thanks to the father, that turned out okay anyway. The upshot of this is a younger generation who are taught to work hard and ideally to work together. Number five, they deliberately nurture a culture of forgiveness. People around the world watched in awe after the Nickel Mine schoolhouse tragedy as the Amish put their arms around the family of the man who killed those little girls. It was extraordinary. No one expected them to do that, except for those who knew the Amish, and we weren't surprised at all. Forgiveness is built straight into their culture, and it is emphasized. Their children often watch as adults ask forgiveness from the church for various things, both large and small. And the forgiveness is always given by the church. Always. It is also very much a part of their home life. And I think this probably helps explain why the Amish have a divorce rate of less than 1%. Number 6. Bear with me here. Don't get offended too fast. Amish churches are led by men. As I mentioned before, Amish boys know that they might someday be called upon to shoulder the responsibilities of becoming ministers or bishops. It is a church primarily led by men. Obviously, this is a highly charged topic in the churches of Christ right now, and it will be interesting to me to see how this conversation between us plays out. There is much we need to study, discuss, and decide, but from a practical standpoint, entirely separate from whatever interpretation of the Bible you want to make, I think that we need to proceed with caution as we do this, and this is why. In searching for reasons behind the high retention rate of the Amish, I stumbled upon some statistics indicating that male leadership in the Amish church may very well be one of the factors that contribute to the high retention rate. The following statistics and observations were not gathered by members of the Church of Christ, and none of this information is in my Amish parenting book, because frankly, my editor was as uncomfortable with including it as I am in presenting it. In recent years, there have been many articles and books written by people outside our fellowship about the feminization of the older mainline Christian denominations. The crux of these articles is a concern that year by year, fewer and fewer men are participating in church leadership as more and more women take up their responsibilities, and their memberships continue to decline. One reason posed for this is the possibility that boys being taken to church by mothers to a church run by women might tend to view church primarily as a feminine experience. As a mother who has raised 3 sons, I am particularly sensitive to the ways in which Christianity is presented to men and boys. And this is why the following statistic is so important to me. The Swiss do a census of their population every 10 years. The questions in the census have remained the same for decades. And one of those questions are about church attendance. They have been able to accurately trace church involvement from one generation to the next throughout their entire population. An analysis of the census information was undertaken in the early 90s to determine what factors will cause a child to continue with their parents' religion. What they found is that it is the religious practice of the father, above all other considerations, that determines the future attendance or absence of their children from church. The numbers they uncovered to support this observation were not just surprising, they were staggering. In summary, the statistics show that if the father does not go to church, no matter how regular or devout the mother is in her religious practice, only one child in 50 becomes a regular church member. Let me repeat that. If it's a mother only, they found that they retained only one child in 50. One out of 50. I know, I was stunned. My mother took me to church without a dad. So that was one of the reasons I was so staggered by this. If a father attends regularly, then regardless of whether the mother attends or not, at least one child in 3 will become an adept who attends church regularly. Let me repeat that. The father's presence brings it from 1 in 50 to 1 in 3. You guys in here, you don't know how much power you have to keep your kids faithful. This is how powerful the father's presence is. The obvious conclusion is that there's something about men that resonates with their children religiously in a very powerful way. So here's the contrast. The older mainline denominations who have opted for a feminized clergy and leadership have been in steep decline for several decades. The Amish, on the other hand, which have strong male leadership, are keeping 90% of their young people and doubling every 20 years. There is also a statistical study done by Promise Keepers. That one was in Switzerland. This is in the United States. It's a little bit different because they have studied the influence of one family member leading the rest to Christ, someone being converted and the chances of leading the rest of their family to Christ. And the statistics go like this. If a child is the first member of a family to come to Christ, about 5% of the time, the rest of the family will follow. If the mother is the first member of a family to come to Christ, about 34% of the time, the rest of the family will follow. If the father is the first one to come to Christ, 93% of the time, the family follows. That's why I'm saying let's be cautious. Number 7. The Amish take ownership of their children's education. In the late 50s and 60s, school districts began to consolidate into large countywide schools to which children were bused. The Amish, up to this point, had allowed their children to attend public schools, but having their children taken out of the closer school districts was not acceptable to them. They felt like they no longer had a voice in their children's education, and so they refused to send them. Amish men went to jail rather than cooperate. The Amish, who ordinarily never go to court, did so in order to save their children. Ultimately, it was taken all the way to the United States Supreme Court, who eventually ruled that the Amish had the right to educate their own kids. In Amish communities all over the United States, one-room schoolhouses sprang up, and the Amish began to educate their own. Surprisingly, one of the things that was not and is not on the curriculum is Bible. Mm-hmm. Amish fathers and mothers feel strongly that it is their responsibility to teach their faith to their own children. These one-room schoolhouses continue to teach children the basics. The faith of the Amish, though, is passed down from generation to generation, directly from the mother and the father and the grandmother and the grandfather. They do not delegate this responsibility. Every Amish man I talked to felt strongly that the souls of his children are not the churches and it's not the schools, it's his responsibility. The result of this is that although an Amish teen might wrestle with whether or not to become Amish, it is very rare for them to question the existence of God or salvation through Christ. This, I have found, that they just take to be a given, just as it was taught to them from the time they were toddlers. Conclusion. Why are modern Amish youth returning to their Amish churches in droves, especially since many of them tell me that they don't actually buy in to the whole Amish concept, their style of dress or worship? They know that's not necessary to get to heaven. It is not great preaching or wonderful worship services or great youth programs or wonderful praise teams or fill in the blank. Some of my Amish friends have told me privately that they would really love better preaching and more inspiring and engaging worship. The Amish youth who come back and are baptized into the Amish church know exactly what they are coming back to. I've seen a lot of church programs and fads come to go. My husband and I have worked to the point of exhaustion. We've been in ministry now 46 years with little to show for it with some of those programs. After spending so much time with the Amish, I am convinced that the secret to their growth and retention, the very top reason, the number one reason, is more basic than the latest whatever. Even the newest method of evangelism. Retaining our young people does have to be our top priority because we're losing ground. and we want to survive too. Retaining our children, in my opinion, more than anything else, comes down to doing whatever it takes to make every last person sitting in our pews, men, women, and children, to feel that they are, to quote that one Amish mother, a necessary and useful part of our family. That's all I got. But I'll take questions now. Yes, sir.
In teaching the Bible at home, did you find that they have any commonality or preference for a version or what? We talk a lot about our favorite version.
Yeah. It depends. Again, like I said, there's 40 different Amish sects. The most conservative would be the Schwarzentrubers. The Schwarzentrubers, next one up would be Andy Weaver's. They only use Martin Luther's Bible, which I think was finished in 1545. It's old German. The Amish are not just bilingual, they are trilingual. They speak English, which they learn when they enter the first grade. The Pennsylvania Dutch is their Amish tongue, is their mother tongue. If you ever try to speak to a child under the age of six, they're probably not going to understand you. I didn't know that at first. I was trying to talk to them. they have really enjoyed having me hanging around. They speak Pennsylvania Dutch, which is basically a modern form of Swiss and German, and it's all mixed together. Then they also understand and read what's called High German. And the way it's been described to me is their High German is a lot like our Old English, like Beowulf or something. So the Schwarzentrubers today, they don't get very much of it. And it's kind of sad because they would never, ever touch a modern translation. The Old Order Amish, however, surprised me when I started seeing the international versions lying around. And the very first night that we met any of them, Steve and I, the father wanted to talk Bible, and he brought out his NIV, and he was very well read. So it just depends on the sect. Yeah.
Serena, two things. One is, first of all, you might explain to folks if they don't know what it means, Old Order Amish.
I'm sorry. Thank you. Old Order Amish, in those 40 sects, they're kind of right in the middle. Let's see, there would be also like Beachy Amish. Beachy Amish are allowed to drive cars. You have New Order Amish. You have New Order Amish, which I think is hilarious. And then all kinds of things in between. They split even more than Churches of Christ. In general, they don't disfellowship one another. They just go on their way. They're all very autonomous, and if there's a problem with, if a tornado hits, they're all there, whether they agree or not.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and the other thing was, not that I want to divert anybody from your book, because I think I'd like to recommend a book that
which
attached
one?
To this. You mentioned Nickel Mines.
Yes.
And if the folks don't know much about the Amish, there's a book out called Amish Grace, which starts with the Nickel Mines and then talks about their attitude toward grace and forgiveness.
It's incredible.
It's an incredible book. It will touch you and it will inspire you amazingly.
Absolutely.
What they feel about how you have to forgive.
Absolutely. And coincidentally, one of my books is formed around an Amish midwife, and I went and stayed in Michigan with an Amish midwife for a while to make it accurate. Even though she was from Michigan, she had been in Pennsylvania when that happened and going to a wedding. And her daughter was a school teacher. And they just wanted to go and pray. They were so tore up, and they wanted to go pray. And they were led through the police lines because they were Amish. And everyone else was being held back. But they were allowed through, and I've got a picture of them. And I think it was the New York Times that I found it. She didn't even know it existed. Katie didn't. But of her and her daughter standing there crying. But when they came back, they were just inundated with media. Ann Curry. Picture of Ann Curry with her microphone in her face. And of course, the Amish hate photos, you know. And all these microphones and everything. And then there's my little Katie, about my age, so little. And she told me later, she said, I was really scared. And she said, I didn't know what to say, but I prayed. And Jesus gave me some answers. And so she actually spoke out. And she said about a paragraph, and basically it was that we forgive because Jesus forgave us. And that went around the world. And I can't help but think that when you have extraordinary faith enough to forgive like they did, the world's going to pay attention, and they're going to be inspired.
Well,
that's a great thing.
Yes, I understand from that book, they quote the Lord's Prayer in every service. Maybe you have to
depends,
found it.
Depends
maybe
on...
It was the particular form of Amish mm-hmm. that were there at Nickel Mines, I think. Mm-hmm. But the particular thing they want to emphasize is part of the Lord's Prayer that says, if you don't forgive those mm-hmm. who sin against you, the Lord will not forgive you. Mm-hmm. They feel like they have to forgive. Mm-hmm.
They emphasize some very different things than what we emphasize, and that's one of the ones that is remarkable. Yeah, it's a great book. Yeah.
I was just wondering, I have a 3-year-old boy, mm-hmm. and I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how the Amish mothers in particular like involve the really young kid in the day-to-day chores and life, and just how you do that with young kids.
Well, in the book, I mentioned the... I have a letter from an Amish woman that I asked, you know, at what age is work appropriate? And she gave me the sweetest little letter because it's like, well, at 11, they can, you know, fire up the mm-hmm. wringer washer machine. It's gasoline powered, and they can do laundry. And I'm thinking, I couldn't have when I was 11. You know, they have different, you know, at 3, they can do this, that, and the other. But
at 7 or 8, they start to milk a cow.
7, 8, they start to milk a cow. I thought about getting a cow. My Amish friend called me. She every now and then, one of my Amish friends, she called me on the from her little, you know, phone chanty because they don't have their phones in their home. And she was talking to me, you know, about what she had planted and this and that. And I told her, I said, I'm going to get a cow. And I thought she was going to fall out of that. She's like, oh, Serena. She said, when it's wintertime, I'm going to come down and I'm going to watch you out there. No. And she made it look so easy. But, you know, to answer your question, as far as how, they're just with them all the time. You know, they're just really with them all the time. And I think one of the things they do is, they seem to enjoy their kids so much. They take the time to just really enjoy them. I've been asked on various radio interviews and stuff, what about discipline? And my answer to that is, you know, what kind of discipline and all that? My answer is, you know, you really have to take a step back from that because they don't have to use discipline very much because of all the teaching and the training that they do. They also feed their kids really well. You know, and the nutrition, all those women are so into nutrition. And, that's helpful too. I'm not really sure what to tell you. Yeah.
You said they have one room schoolhouses, but mm-hmm. You're kind of describing homeschooling and life learning, mm-hmm. basically unschooling, which mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. kind of what I do with my son. So
good question.
And he's 6 and he can do the laundry. So
you're doing great. Wow.
I just mm-hmm. can't teach him like accountability to himself and to our family. But do they homeschool?
Absolutely. I'm really glad you mentioned that. Not because they have to, or because they're afraid of the parochial schools. A lot of my friends homeschool. When I ask them, you know, because I was like, you've got this wonderful little, you know, school down here. And they're like, we just like being with our kids.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, we just really enjoy that time with our children. So it's really big among the Amish, the homeschooling. And, in fact, she took me to someone's garage. Everyone's got a little home business. And this woman had all the homeschooling curriculum in her garage, and it was really neat to see it. So. Yeah.
So if you're not born Amish, is there any hope for you?
To become Amish?
Are they evangelistic is really my question.
They are not evangelistic at all. Except one older man said, you know, I've always thought the best form of evangelism was living a life of integrity. But people have tried to become Amish. Some people have succeeded. It's very hard. And one of the biggest barriers is just the language barrier. And, you know, we have had so much freedom. It's really hard to put yourself in that position where you, I don't want to wear a dress every day. You know, I mean, it's hard. And some English people have tried, but I think in general they had a very romanticized idea of what it was like. So, yeah. Okay.
How often do they study the Bible?
It depends on the family. But a lot of them have devotionals in the morning and the evening after they have their family chores. And they all do their chores together in the mornings and bustle around and everything. Like I said, they don't usually work a whole lot alone or expect their children to. And then they'll have prayer. Now, one thing that was interesting to me, the first time I ever ate with them was they always, always do silent prayer. And it's kind of cool, you know, because you get used to hearing other people say prayers, but when you, it's between you and God, in the silence of that table, I tend to pray more than I do when someone else is leading it for me. They feel like it's prideful to lead a prayer. In the church buildings, not church buildings, but during worship, the bishop may lead a prayer for the congregation, but the other men probably wouldn't.
Well, the other thing to mention here is...
Stand up, Sonny.
I just want to mention this, that they only have church every other Sunday. And on the off Sundays, it's family day, and they make a point of reconnecting. If there's any family members that live 2 or 3 miles away they haven't seen through the week, they make a point of getting over there and visiting and maintaining those connections. But it's an every other Sunday kind of thing with the Amish.
And even though they have those 3 and 4 hours services, they don't have evening services because they got to get home and they're driving buggies. So they'll have a meal together. And what's nice about the meal is it's very prescribed. It's, you know, you have boiled eggs and you have lunch meat and you have, you know, I mean, it's, and then you can go crazy on the pots. But it's always the same thing. Do you, yeah.
Do you think that in your interviews of the Amish who, you know, come back to it or whatever, that giving up that family that they've grown up with is a high factor on them not wanting to give up? Because it seems like it's like the kind of the Jewish faith. If you go away and you leave, then they shun you and they have nothing. And here's somebody who's grown up all their life with a very close-knit family, and now to say, okay, you have a decision. You can have the world or you can have our family. Make the decision. It seems like part of that high retention is the fact that that family is willing to totally shun them and have nothing to do with them.
Good point.
It's a hard thing for us to say, well, I'm either grow up the way Dad tells you, or I'm never talking to you again in my life. And I'm not sure that translates over to our culture.
There's a lot of tears. A lot of tears. Because some kids do go. And because they are so connected, it's like an amputation. And it's very, very hard for them to do that.
They can come back.
Stand up.
I can talk loud down here. They can come back, but it requires a kneeling confession.
Oh, yeah, that's
true. In front
of
the church.
Yeah.
If they decide that, okay, I made a mistake, and I'm 30 years old now, and I want to come back to the Amish church, they'll welcome them back. But they go to the front, and they kneel, and they confess the error of their way.
And then
it's all over. It never happened. From that
never
point
happened.
On, no one ever brings it up, and they are totally forgiven for anything.
Yep. Yes, sir.
You did say that if they didn't get baptized, though, before that period of freedom, then they're not shunned, right?
They're not shunned, but they're not totally within the community. They can come and go, but it's not the closeness that they had before. That's the best way I can describe it. And it changes from sect to sect. Now, the Schwarzentruppers are interesting. And, in fact, the book that's going to be made into a movie next is about the Schwarzentruppers. So it's going to be interesting to see how the scriptwriter works with that. But they are the ones that don't believe anybody else is going to heaven. And so they won't have anything to do with the Old Order Amish because they're just way too liberal, which I thought was hilarious that the Old Order Amish was liberal to anyone.
Is there an exact age where a teenager is allowed to make that choice, or is it sort of a range of age?
It's a range of age, and my Amish friend Edna told me that it's getting later. She has some boys that are in their mid-20s. And she said it used to be usually people had decided by the time they were 22. Now she said it tends to be more like even 27 or 28.
And the other thing I was going to ask, okay, say they decide not to adhere to their family's beliefs, where do they go?
A lot of them just go to more liberal Christian type churches. Mennonites is big. And when I say Mennonites are just all over the map as far as conservatism or liberality. I went to one Mennonite church, and they had a band, you know, and Mennonites, the Amish are a cappella, and the Mennonites used to be. Right now, there's a whole group of Mennonites that are debating the whole gay preacher thing, you know, and probably are going to allow it in. Other Mennonites, you can't tell them different from the Amish. They're just all over the map. So they'll choose whether they want it to be conservative or, in, you know, wherever. Yeah.
They also just get a job and go live in an apartment. Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, that's everyone I ever talked to that left the Amish church talks about that loneliness. Because once they've had that connectedness, even if they have some friends and some family, they just never have quite that kind of network. Yeah.
So, just triggering off of that. So you're saying the question that you asked when the Amish teens returned,
mm-hmm.
when you specifically talked to Amish teens that did return,
mm-hmm.
they said it was that connectedness mm-hmm. that they missed. So
mm-hmm.
despite the clothing and the lack of media and all mm-hmm. that stuff, it's the connectedness that they really wanted.
It's worth the sacrifice. It's worth the sacrifice to them. I don't know how to create a culture within our churches that is so compelling that our people will sacrifice in order to be part of it. But I think that's really key. Who else? Yeah.
What's their average family size compared to African American families?
Again, it depends on the sect. The Old Order Amish are averaging around 7 children per family now. The Schwartz and Troubers are averaging anywhere from maybe 12 to 18. I think the average is 12. Now, the reason for that, I think, is because they tend to be the farmers, and you get the same more than the Old Order Amish. The Old Order are becoming more and more, they'll have their little family farm, but they're becoming more and more business-oriented. And so the Schwartz and Troubers are the ones that are farming for a living, and they need those kids just like our great-grandparents did to help them with the family farm.
But don't you think that feeling of connectedness in a large family is fostered more than a family of 1.2 children like we have in America?
It is. It is. Of course, when you're Amish, you've got about, well, for instance, one older Amish grandfather that I talked to, he has 73 grandchildren. And I said, how is that for you? And he goes, well, instead of counting sheep, I just try to name my grandchildren. And so even if you are only able to have that 1.5 children, a lot of them adopt. A lot of them adopt interracially, and they still have the larger family that they're connected to. It is time, I know, that you guys need to go, but if you want to ask me questions, I'll stay here. I mean, whatever you want to do. Oh, I need to, well, thank you.